CBSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor, visiting with Professor Paul Halpern, professor of physics at the University of the Sciences in Philadelphia. His new book is Flashes of Creation, George Gamow, Fred Hoyle, and the Great Big Bang Debate. We are now after the Second War, and our two protagonists, Fred Hoyle at Cambridge and George Gamow at George Washington University, are looking at the big topics of the moment, which is cosmology, but particle physics combined with cosmology. And 46, 47, 48 are critical moments in the development of these competing or parallel theories. There is a wonderful moment, however. It is either 46 or 47. Our hero, Mr. Hoyle, Professor Hoyle, and two of his colleagues at Cambridge, Bondi and Gold, watch a movie called The Dead of Night. It is a horror movie, a scary movie that ends with a beginning and begins with an ending. It's looped, a dream that becomes a nightmare that becomes a fact. And at the end of this, they have a breakthrough. What is it, Paul?
So after seeing this movie, which is which has a twist ending where the nightmare is repeated again and again, they went back to Bondi's apartment in Cambridge, had a few drinks, and over drinks, Tommy Gold said, well, what if the universe is like that? So they thought about it and they said, well, maybe we can design a model of the universe that even though it expands, new matter fills in the gaps. So it pretty much looks the same forever. So as the galaxies move apart from each other, then new matter slowly trickles in. That matter clusters, eventually forms stars, and finally forms galaxies. So I like to think of the difference between the Big Bang and the steady state as having to do with stadium seating. So imagine, let's say, Yankee Stadium, people are watching a ball game, and then suddenly there's an announcement on a loudspeaker that you need to move back and you need to leave at least one row in between you and the person in front of you and the person back of you. So people start moving back and the people would expand and fill a greater and greater part of the stadium, and there'd be gaps, row gaps between the seats. Well, that's the Big Bang theory. In the steady state theory, imagine that some young people want to take advantage of this to sit closer in the stadium, and they manage to sneak in and fill in all the empty rows slowly. So then it would look exactly the same. You'd still have filled in rows. And new people would fill in the gaps where the old people left. So that would be the steady state theory.
Yes, I think Fred Hoyle calls it continuous creation. And continuous creation requires the nuclear physics to create. And that is going to be Fred Hoyle's genius. That's where he's following. In order to come up with a steady state, you've got to create matter or energy or both. So let's pursue that. How does Fred Hoyle, Professor Hoyle, imagine these little creations happen? Where do they happen? And it takes us into stars. They had a problem at this point, I believe. The sun, our sun, isn't hot enough to create the elements necessary to imagine the rest of the universe. What does Professor Hoyle do to solve that problem, Paul?
Okay, well, here there are two different problems that are related to each other. One is, how does the original matter in the universe come about? And he used the idea of quantum uncertainty, the idea that if you take a small enough region of space, because of the uncertainty principle, it's possible for new particles to emerge from empty space spontaneously. So that is actually a well-known phenomena. It's that the vacuum can produce particles. And he called that the creation field. So the creation field would bring new particles into birth. The question about the sun and how stars can produce heavier elements is also a very interesting one. And that has to do with the fact that there's a gap in the ladder of element creation. So if you start with hydrogen, it's pretty easy to make helium. You can make it in the Big Bang. You can make it in the sun. Helium is made everywhere. But then if you want to bring helium together to form carbon, there's a big problem. And we need carbon for life, Hoyle recognized. Without carbon, there's no life. And the way to make carbon, he discovered, is you take two helium elements in a very, very hot situation, and the two helium atoms fuse they form beryllium-8, which almost immediately decays. But in that brief moment, there's a quantum process which enables that to unite with another helium atom. And then they forge together and they form a special state of carbon, which is stable. And that's a state of carbon-12. And Hoyle did the calculations and he predicted there's going to be a type of carbon with a certain energy level. And he went to Caltech, said to Willie Fowler, see if you can find this state to prove my theory. And that turned out to be absolutely correct. And the way to get to heat, by the way, is to have dying stars. That's what Hoyle recognizes in his genius. Stars that are at their end point, end of their lifetime, their cores collapse catastrophically. They shrink down and they heat up immensely. So they're much hotter than the cores of the sun.
It is one of the ironies of science history that it is Fred Hoyle on a radio show who invents the term Big Bang that we all love. That is not embraced by Gamow and those people who follow the Big Bang. Gamow thinks of it as the big squeeze. How does he explain the original creation moment, Paul?
Well, Gamow, and working with his student Ralph Alpher, he calls the initial substance of the universe LEM, which is spelled Y-L-E-M, which is a ancient Latin term for matter. I should say medieval Latin term for matter. And they imagined that there was this giant cluster of matter. They didn't know what it was, but somehow it broke up into neutrons in the early universe. And then these neutrons could individually get together through fusion processes and start to form some of the elements, starting with heavy hydrogen and so forth. And neutrons can decay into protons, so that's where you get ordinary hydrogen. So that was the idea behind the process. He never liked the term Big Bang because he said the early universe was neither big and it wasn't an explosion. But Hoyle coined the term on BBC radio as kind of a derisive term. He wanted to make fun of the idea that everything would be created in one blast. He thought it was much more credible to think of things being created slowly over time.
We make a note here because Paul pays attention to the fact that the religious or anti-religious thinking of all of these men and women weigh on the metaphors. For example, those who accept the fact that the universe has a finite age versus those who want oscillation or repetition. It comes in and it goes away. It's always floating around, however, for their choice of metaphors. We come now to a wonderful meeting of these two heroes, protagonists. It is 1956. Do I have that right, Paul? Yes, 1956.
Summer 56.
They're both out west, one at Caltech, the other at the University of Colorado Boulder, where Gamow has moved after he separates and divorces his first wife and moves to the University of Colorado at Boulder. And they're driving in a Cadillac, a white Cadillac, Paul. Is that right, Paul, a white Cadillac?
Well, just to add something, that summer, Gamow had a temporary job. He wasn't in Colorado. He was in La Jolla.
Oh, thank you.
Working for a defense company as a consultant.
And he had some money in his pocket, so that's why the Cadillac.
That's right. So you get the white Cadillac.
So they're driving around together. And are they debating? Are they laughing? How do you imagine their conversation, Paul?
Well, Hoyle and Gamow were both very affable people, and they got along very well with almost everybody else. In fact, in my book, I also mention a subsequent ride that Hoyle took with Lemaître, riding through Europe. So Hoyle loved to kind of ride around and discuss ideas. And he was fine with debating as long as people were open-minded. He didn't like people who were closed-minded, and he didn't like people who were snooty. If somebody tried to pull rank or class on him, he was very upset because he was from a working-class family. But other than that, if people were down to earth, he loved debating with them. So in this white Cadillac, as they were driving around La Jolla, they were talking about the temperature of the universe. And Hoyle thought that the overall temperature of the universe should be close to 0 degrees Kelvin, which is above absolute zero. So almost as close to absolute zero as you can get. And Gamow at that time, he had gone back and forth on temperature, but apparently he was interested in a temperature of about 10 degrees above absolute zero. And later, Hoyle regretted that they didn't split the difference and make a prediction about the temperature of the universe, because that was something that was found in 1964.
Oh, let's get to it. This is the accidental revelation of physics that create the opportunity, word create is wrong, that guide us for where we are today. There, the two men, Penzias, who gets his PhD in 61, and he's from Europe, and Wilson from Houston, are working for Bell Labs outside of Princeton University. And they're originally there about communication, quasar, the first communication satellites. But then they have an idea that they're going to find the halo of our galaxy. And they can't find it. It probably doesn't exist. I don't want to say doesn't, because that's a conclusion in physics. However, they do find a hiss that is in all directions. What is it, Paul?
Well, they were perplexed because they aimed their radio telescope in all different directions, and they had a persistent hiss. And first they tried to rule out noise from the city. Bell Labs is pretty close to New York City. And they subtracted that background noise. They wanted to see if there was any noise in the area, any construction work. And finally, they decided to rule out the idea that pigeon droppings, which they called white dielectric material deposited on the antenna, was the cause of the hiss. So they went outside and cleaned up all the pigeon droppings and trapped all the pigeons in cages. And those cages are now, one of them is in the Smithsonian Institute on display. And once they did that, they still got the hiss. And then, coincidentally, Penzias knew someone who knew someone who went to a lecture by Jim Peebles, who was working with Robert Dickey in Princeton. And Peebles was talking about the project that Robert Dickey had to try to detect radiation from the early universe. And Penzias was like, wow, that sounds related to what we're doing. So he called up Dickey and talked about the hiss. And Dickey was there in a brown bag lunch meeting with his associates and students, including Peebles. And he was talking for a while, and then he hung up the phone and said, boys, we've been scooped, meaning that they found the hiss first, accidentally, which is a hiss they were looking for. Dickey was trying to look for the hiss. Actually, they prove a different theory, that the universe was oscillating. He had his own theory that the universe had previous stages. He wasn't looking for the Big Bang hiss, but it turned out to be proof of the Big Bang.
Yes, it's the Big Bang. In other words, what we have now is Gamow vindicated and Hoyle challenged. So when we come back, the later years of our two protagonists, the book is Flashes of Creation, George Gamow, Fred Hoyle, and the Great Big Bang Debate. Paul Halpern is the author. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.